Now, we have been studying the Ten Commandments in Wednesday night service, and we have been reading them, which I intend to do this morning, kind of as a reminder of the basic law that came down from Sinai. And so, Exodus chapter 20, then God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above or on earth beneath or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not take the name of your Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male or your female servant, or your cattle, or your sojourner who stays with you. And some versions might say is within your gates, which is the same meaning. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Now, last week we spoke about the man who does not follow the commandments, which is a commonly encountered person in the world where we live today. And today we're going to speak of the man who follows, or more accurately, perhaps the man who tries to follow, for none of us is perfect. But the precepts and the practice of Christianity are becoming countercultural today. As time goes by, I'm not talking about lip service, who somebody might say, okay, this is a Christian idea, if they're pushing some particular notion or agenda of their own. And so they'll say, well, this is a Christian precept, which may or may not be the case. But Christianity that does not modify behavior, or which exacts no cost at all from the practitioner, is Christianity in name only. I once had an argument with a man who claimed to be a Christian but showed no fruit of it at all. And I told him, they use money as a yardstick in America to measure everything. So if you went to church on Christmas and Easter and put in $5 to the plate each time, you have $10 worth of Christianity for the year. He spent more than that on a shift in smokes. But Christianity, which does not effect any change in the individual, is Christianity in name only. Because the early church was known by a number of things. They were known by the hymns they sang to each other. They were known by the love they showed to each other. They were known because there wasn't any needy or hungry person, because they helped each other. And so They were notorious in Rome because someone would take a baby that they didn't want and expose it, leave it out. And these Christians would go around and they'd pick them up and take them home. Or during a plague, the Christians would go and help the sick, and their relatives would desert them and leave them to die. And so they were known as a peculiar people, odd people, strange people, curious people. Jesus, when he had a number of people following him, said, "Have you counted the cost?" He said, "What king, when someone comes against him with 10,000 troops, doesn't look and see how many he has? And if he doesn't have enough, while they are still far away, he sends a delegation and says, let's make peace. You know, what's it going to cost me?" He said, "If a man starts to build a tower in his cucumber field to check for thieves or wild animals, he figures it out first that he's got enough money to finish it. Otherwise, people are going to mock him and say, this man started, but he couldn't finish." So he said, "You better do the same. Are you willing to pay the cost?" What used to be more mainstream is now more scarce. Lying, stealing, covetousness have always been common, let's face it. It's always been common. But in the culture today, they tend to be not only accepted, but to a degree expected. So do we expect our politicians to lie? The answer is yes. Do we get upset when they make some promise and they don't keep it, or they say something that's a blatant lie? Eh, not so much. Not so much. Down in one of the parishes in Louisiana, they used to run for sheriff. And there was a man running for sheriff that was a notorious crook, and a young fellow, straight arrow reformer, he was running against him. And so they asked one old woman, "Who are you going to vote for?" "Oh, I'm going to vote for the old sheriff," she said. And they said, "Why are you doing that? Don't you know he's a crook? Don't you want to vote for this other fellow?" "Nah," she says, "why should I ruin a good man?" Evangelicals are seen as a distinct interest group. Their voting patterns are studied, you know, like a strange species, to see what might draw them out. What does it take to capture that vote? Because who can understand these people? So as Christians, as I say, we've looked at the Ten Commandments on Wednesday, and we esteem the Ten Commandments, and we'd like to live by them. And so you might ask yourself, what does this man look like that wants to follow the Ten Commandments? Anybody here familiar with the old legend of Diogenes, the Greek philosopher that went around with a lantern, and when they asked him why he was carrying a lantern all the time, said, "Well, he's looking for an honest man. Just can't find one." So what are we looking for? I've had the privilege in my life to know a number of men that worked very hard to be Christian men, to live by faith. They would try to follow the Ten Commandments. And I remember these men. I remember them well. And if I was going to suggest to you a role model, I would not suggest any of the athletes out on the football field, whether standing or kneeling. I would not suggest anyone in Hollywood at all. I would not esteem our current crop of politicians as a general rule, but I would tell you look for one of these individuals, and it could be a man, it could be a woman, that desires, has an intense desire to live this way. If we start at commandment one, our person or our man who worships God alone, you don't find him at the altar of mammon. Now, Jesus said, you can't serve God and mammon, which is a word meaning money and stuff. Hey, if you watch the commercials on television, which I go do something else because they're too long, but it's all about stuff. If you buy our stuff, you will be happy. But rather than stuff, the value of salvation through the grace of God and coming from faith in Christ is the most valuable thing he has. He realizes all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, but a door is open by Christ for us to approach God, sinful as we are. And so the work of Christ in redemption is complete and was complete when he arose from the tomb. But the work we have in learning these things, in growing in faith, in becoming sanctified, in progressing, if you will, because Paul said, work out your salvation in fear and trembling because the Lord's working in you. It's a lifetime worth of work. When we are advised to be very careful about judging other people, that's with the bedrock realization that we each have a lifetime worth of work to do on ourselves. How can I worry about somebody else when I got so much work to do on myself? Our person, our man who wants to follow, is in church on a regular basis. He doesn't agree with those who claim to be Christians but say, oh, I don't need to go to church to be a good Christian. I don't need that. Well, as an old camper, I can tell you if you pull a coal out of the fire, it pretty quick gets cold. He knows he's got a need to hear the gospel. He's got a need to hear messages from the Bible on a regular basis. And aside from that, he finds time for ministry rather than being too busy. You can see what's important to him by his priorities. So he puts time, or he puts money, he puts effort into ministry. Ministry takes effort. You know, I'd take the boys out fishing, and we'd be fishing way up a trout stream, and they'd get tired, say, Dad, my legs are tired. I say, if you want to learn to be a fisherman, you've got to learn to suffer. Can't learn to suffer, you never learn to be good. Same thing if I took them up the mountain hunting. We're tired. If you're going to learn, you got to learn to suffer. If they caught a big fish out of season, I'd say, throw it back. They say, Dad, it's a great fish. I say, throw it back. Builds character. And so we tend to find time for the things that we consider to be vital or important or of first importance. But our man who wants to follow may not be a religious man. Might not be religious. He might not worry about various forms. He might not worry about various rules. Okay? He wants to love God. He wants to love his neighbor. And he's not particularly worried about what other people might think of him. He's worried about what God sees in his heart, which no man can see. He wants that to be right. I went one time to a church-sponsored pool party. And at the last minute, they said, oh, we want all the men to wear a T-shirt in the pool. We don't want any man to go in the pool bare-chested. Because somebody, I don't even remember who, doesn't matter, had some kind of conviction that a man should wear a T-shirt swimming. Well, I had a T-shirt along. I put it on. I went in. I didn't want to upset anybody. But was I excited about that particular conviction? Nope. Was I interested in it or the reasons for it? No. No. I mean, that's what somebody else wanted. I went along lest I offend. But there's a host of little rules that some folks consider are very, very important. Do this, don't do that. Do this, don't do that. You got to beware of being a rule Christian. If I do these 10 things and I don't do those 10 things, I'm good. But the question is, where is your heart? Now, as far as images, commandment 2, our man who follows knows it's not possible to make an accurate portrayal of the glory and majesty of God. The human mind isn't capable of it. Moses just got to see the backside of God. He said, I'll have all my goodness pass before you, but you can't see my face because you won't be able to live afterwards. You don't see him praying in front of a statue. You don't see him praying to a saint. He prays to God. And the man who follows is going to have a reverence and respect for the name of God. If he swears to tell the truth, he's going to do all in his power to tell the truth, not shade it or spin it, but tell the truth. You never hear him curse using the name of God. But you really don't need an oath to require him to tell the truth or compel him to tell the truth, because he understands about the commandment about lying. If he does some kind of work in the name of God, he tries to make sure it's honoring to God. And you'll see him give the glory to God rather than trying to promote himself in any way. If you do it for God, if you do it in the name of God, then any glory that attaches belongs to God. On the Sabbath, he realizes that the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. God-given rest, a day to worship, a day to reflect, perhaps a day to study. And if he has a family, you're going to see him imparting some of those values to the children. He wants to attend a worship service of some kind. And to me, when we were closed for the pandemic and all I could do was send out a devotional, Sunday seemed like a crazy day. You know, I pace around and I tell my wife, you know, what am I going to do today? It doesn't seem right. He might be in the leadership of the local church. You might see him teaching Sunday school. You would hope that the preacher is a man along these lines. He tries not to work at a regular job. Now, I have to confess, I worked for a number of years in a power plant, so I work many a Sunday simply because people seem to get upset if you shut the lights off, so the work had to go on. But once they kicked me upstairs into the management, then I was able to attend a worship service on Sunday. Honor your father and mother. Now, you might ask, how do you do it? And there's as many different answers as you will find sets of parents. They vary greatly in their needs or in their perceived needs. My father was fiercely independent, and he never would ask for help. I got a phone call one day from my sister in Buffalo. She says, "Hey, Ward, Dad bought a stove over here, and he's bringing it home. He left such and such a time. I expect him to be home such and such a time. Why don't you stop by for a random visit to be there to help him get that stove out of the trunk and get it in the house?" So, sure enough, I went over there about that time, and he had the stove, going to unload it by himself, and I helped him get it in and so forth. Never, ever did we tell Dad what we were up to. He would not have been happy. And so, you're going to have to honor your parents by looking at what their needs are and looking at what their values are. Some are going to need financial help. Others need company. They want you to call on the phone. They want you to stop by. You know, you got birthdays, you got anniversaries, you got holidays, all of these things. When my mother got real feeble and couldn't walk anymore, she was complaining about Thanksgiving, and we snatched her out of the nursing home and hauled her up the steps on a wheelchair, and we set her at the table for Thanksgiving. She was mightily pleased. Sometimes it's getting people out of the nursing home is almost like getting them out of jail, you know. It's not easy. But if parents need to be taken care of, the man that tries to follow is going to find a time to do that. Now, sometimes, in spite of everything, the parents have to go to a nursing home, and it's important to go and visit them. The staff is going to know who that person is because they see him all the time. It's end of life issues when parents grow feeble are the hardest of all. And the bottom line is you do the best you can with what's available. You shall not murder. Now, we don't see a lot of murder in society today, especially in this little corner of the world. We do see one from time to time. But Jesus has some commands out there about being angry with your brother or calling your brother names. If you're trying to love your neighbor as yourself, then you've got to watch this attitude of anger. You can love someone and you can act in a loving manner even if you don't particularly like them, because it's a question of will, it's a question of attitude, it's a question, what kind of thoughts are you going to harbor in your mind? What are you going to dwell on? A lot of evil can come out of having angry thoughts and sometimes vengeful thoughts, conflict. Now, it's all foolishness if you think that because I'm a Christian, conflict will never come. I'm here to tell you, conflict will come. There's going to be people who don't like you. I know it's hard to believe, but I've run into people in my lifetime that didn't like me. Go figure. But you make efforts to overcome evil with good. Because in any fight, there's got to be give and take. There's got to be two sides. And if you refuse to fight, eventually the fight will die away. There's no future in it. You know, the proverb says, a soft answer turneth away wrath. But a strident answer stirs up the controversy. You know, so you can throw water on the fire, you can throw gas on the fire, with predictable results either way. You shall not commit adultery. I've had this conversation with a number of people in the course of my life, but if you're married, that means on a given day at a given time, you stood up in front of God and witnesses and you took a number of vows. Now, if you fully intended to keep those vows at that time, then you intend to keep them going forward. This being the case, you don't look for another. You spend no time or effort in that direction. And we do tend to find the things we look for. Unless it's one of my tools that I need for the job right at hand that I find 6 months later somewhere else. But if you blindly stumble into something that you were not looking for, like Joseph in the house of Potiphar, then you hustle away. You say, not for me. Not for me. I have to add that times are quite different now than when some of these commands were given. Times are quite different than New Testament times. And if a spouse has a very strong desire to depart, in this day and age, there's really nothing that can be done. If they really want to depart, they're going to go. And there's no action the devout person can take to stop it or prevent it. It's just a fact of life. You shall not steal. What should we refrain from stealing? The answer is anything. So our person who follows can be trusted with anything you might trust them with, because the intention is to be honest. The intention is to not take that which is not his. So he's not always looking for the ideal situation where you can steal and there's no one around to catch you. I read a story one time in a hunting magazine about some fellows went with a four-wheel drive truck up in the hills, and there was no one around, and they shot an illegal elk, stuck it in the pickup truck, drove on out. They were smiling. But when they backed around to turn around to go out, they backed into a soft snowbank, left a perfect imprint of their license plate. Pretty quick, the game warden come knocking on the door. We should be honest with the employer's goods and money, honest with the employer's time. So if you've sold the time for wages, the time is no longer your own. And so you try to give good measure by working diligently. Do your best. Keep short accounts. Try to make things right. If you borrow something, bring it back. If you borrow money, pay it back. Shall not bear false witness. Many commentators expand that into a prohibition on lying in general. Jesus did that when he told his disciples, let your yes be yes, let your no be no. You shouldn't need some kind of oath to make you tell the truth. And you definitely shouldn't be playing this game, this oath over here is binding, but this oath over here is not binding. So you can take this oath and really not tell the truth, and it's okay. There's no better example of that than good old Charlie Brown when he wants to kick the football, and Lucy gave him a signed statement saying she wouldn't pull it away. He runs up to kick it, and she pulls it away, and he foot goes up, he falls on the back, and he's laying there groaning, and she's looking at the paper and says, funny thing about this signed statement, it was never notarized. So that's called games and spin. Simply tell the truth. If your word is your bond, people are going to trust you. I like the Psalm 15. We read there, the man swears to his own hurt and does not change. You know, life is full of change. Circumstances change. And you might say, I will do this. And then all of a sudden, the changing circumstance makes it way more painful, way more expensive to go ahead and keep that promise than you ever anticipated. We've all had these things happen in our lives. But the man who wants to follow, as we see in that psalm, he pays the expense, he bears the pain, he keeps his promise. Why? Because he said he would. And so our man who follows does not seek refuge in a lie when he gets in trouble. He might have to pay a penalty for telling the truth. I can very confidently predict that this man will be trusted by those who know him well, and soon trusted by those he meets. I brought a man into the office one time that had done something, and I told him, if you tell me the truth today, you're going to save your job. If you lie to me today, I will most certainly fire you today in this meeting. And then I asked him about this thing that he had done. And he disclaimed any knowledge of it at all, even though I had clearly told him what the consequences would be. I happened to have a video of him doing that, which he said he did not do. And so he lost his job that day, and the union couldn't get it back for him. But had he simply told the truth, I still would have punished him in some fashion, but he would have saved his job. But he was so immersed in lying and the practice of lying that he thought he could get by one more time. Jesus told the people that were arguing with him, your father is the devil. And when he lies after his own nature. And shame with you. Do not covet. A lot of trouble comes from covetousness. You want something that's not yours. You have an inordinate desire for something that is not yours. You utilize means to obtain it that are not ethical or not right, because the desire that you have outweighs ethics, outweighs common sense, outweighs scriptural commands, whatever it is. But you got to have this. So our man that doesn't covet tends to be content with what he has. And what I have is enough. It's enough. He gives thanks for what he has. I'm thankful that I have what I have. Now, if he has a desire to progress, get ahead in his career, he sees the road to that by working diligently and showing that he's a good workman. Not so much trying to take away a position from somebody else. We can't all be rich. We can't all be leaders, because if we are all leaders, there'd be no followers. And so, in his work, he doesn't necessarily gossip or carry tales. He isn't running to the boss and saying, you know what Harry did? You know, you should really demote him. I'd be a good fit for that job. A lot of that goes on. I've seen it. But he knows that an inordinate desire for something that is somebody else's will lead to sinful behavior. And the problem with covetousness is it's like pouring water down a hole or throwing wood on a fire. It's never satisfied. And so if you get that thing that you want, guess what? You're going to want something else. If you make your first million, you're going to want the second million. Or if you buy this lovely house, you're going to want a bigger house. Buy a Cadillac, you're going to want a Lamborghini. It's always something more. Always something more. Well, who is this man that follows? My desire from here is that this person is each and every one out there. Now, we can fail, okay? When people came and complained to me about some initiative that I was doing, I had a common answer that I gave them. There's one right that I will never, ever give up, and that's the right to stub my toe, stumble, fall down, skin my knee, get it wrong, but then get up and start again. Because that's how all progress is made. And if you never stumbled, you never tried. We don't give up. We continue to press forward toward the mark for the prize of the upward calling of God in Jesus Christ. The commandments are a measuring stick, or I might refer to them as a mirror. You can look in them and see how you're doing. And they also do help to obtain peace. Judge Judy says, if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember your story. But if you've told a bunch of lies, you've got to keep them all straight in your mind. Otherwise, you're going to stumble over one or the other of them when you're making up some other lie. So it's important to have peace in the workplace or peace in the neighborhood. It's very important to have peace in a local church. Because when there's strife or division in the church, that's a huge problem. Now, as I said before, only a foolish man thinks there's no conflict. Because there is conflict. You can be the target of sinful people, and they might have motives of envy. They might have motives of covetousness. You don't know what the motives are. But even if you sail on troubled seas, you can have peace in your heart. Christ said, "Peace I give you, not as the world gives. But I will give you, in this life you'll have trouble, I give you peace." You have a relationship with God through Christ. In Ephesians it says, he has adopted us into the family through his good pleasure, kindness to us. And so we're heirs in the family. We're joint heirs with Christ. So in times of trouble, you can draw close to God. You haven't estranged yourself from God, and you have an advocate. We have a high priest that has been tempted and troubled, but without sin, who understands our nature, who understands our problems. You'll find that people will be willing to lend to you if you have the reputation of paying back what you borrow. But the commandments are helping us live in peace together. What we see in our society today, perhaps more than anything in my opinion, is a loss of basic civility and courtesy. And so any kind of an argument soon devolves into name-calling. That's not what we want. If you have the reputation of telling the truth, people will tend to believe you. Your spouse is going to trust you if your spouse knows you're trustworthy. And your heart will be at peace if you aren't harboring bitter thoughts. We did a kid's corner one time, which I wrote for the pastor, and I had a guy come up with two concrete blocks on his shoulder. And he said, "Please pray for me so I can carry this burden." And the preacher then said, "Well, what's your burden?" "Oh, grudges, mainly hard feelings. I didn't get paid back, and I didn't get credit for some things I did." And the preacher says, "Well, why don't you take them off and put them down?" He said, "I've tried, but I just can't. I pick them right back up again." And the preacher refused to pray for the man. And he said, "The altar is here. I want you to put those down here and walk away." You know, and the man put the two concrete blocks. I picked another volunteer. I didn't want to carry two concrete blocks on my shoulder. But he left them and he walked away. I'm not sure if it was a better lesson for the kids or a better lesson for the adults. But I have indeed known people, not literally but figuratively, that carried a load like that always. And it wears you down. But your heart will be at peace if you don't harbor bitter thoughts, if you don't covet that which is not yours. And I just wish that not only this congregation, but everybody could come to live in that fashion. But perhaps I got to wait for the millennial kingdom for that. But that's a subject for another day. I believe that Steve has got a closing hymn for